Public Works Committee meeting for Tuesday, March 18, 2025. We have Alderman Merrick, Alderman Coke, Alderman Cornelius, Alderman Solon present, and staff, large staff. Anybody else online?
Just Chris and Aaron.
Okay, and Alderman Punkhouse online. Okay, no citizens' comments? None?
No, sir. Just here to observe.
Okay. Welcome. Minutes for correction slash approval for February 18, 2025.
Good.
Good?
Good.
We'll take them as passed. Okay, new business. Item one, PW 2025-20, snow operations report.
Well, hopefully this is the last one for the year. Again, it's been a very mild year for second year in a row, and we're very thankful for that. But we did use 1,100 tons of salt. Most of that was the possibility of ice events and little icing. With ice, you know, we can't lay just light layers of salt. We actually have to put a good layer down to keep everybody from slipping. One other thing to notice in the memo was the large expenses of some of the older trucks that were down. I think I mentioned that in the last one. That hasn't changed. We actually have two that are not worth fixing that will be sold for scrap. One was a blown transmission and one was a blown motor. And the one that blew the motor was actually a newer truck. We took the motor out of the older truck because it was junk anyway and put it in the new truck so we can keep it going. So we'll keep that truck around for a little bit here and use it through the end of the season, but there will be two for scrap. One was an 03 and one was an 04, I believe.
Yeah.
And they were the oldest in the fleet. They were not redone. The electronics were not serviced anymore. They were just long past their prime. So that's probably more notable than 1,100 tons of salt, but I will take any other questions you have.
All good? Chris? All right, we'll move on to item two, PW 2025-21, resolution authorizing participation in the salt of State of Illinois bulk rock salt purchase.
This is the
dust, dust. Chris, can you hear us okay? Was that a noise? Sorry.
I can hear you. I'm okay. Just listening. I'm driving, so I'm good.
Great. Thanks. Okay. Sorry.
That's fine. Okay. This is the second year for this program. It basically gives Bart and I the authority to place or on behalf of the city to execute contracts and bids for things like rock salt through the state purchase. When I asked last year why this was, is they had some people that were bidding that weren't authorized. So they actually wanted council motion to authorize the people to actually go through with these contracts.
Okay.
Yeah. Are we just anticipating a big increase again?
No. I think with the mild winter, we will not have a big increase. And not just a mild winter here, there's mild winter a lot of other places as well. They're not expecting a large increase. Didn't have any river freezes this year. It's kind of been a normal year.
Do you have, so you probably have a bunch left in storage, right?
We got about 500, between 450 and 500 tons left, and 1,000 tons at the county.
Okay, so you didn't use any of the county stuff?
Nope.
And it's good, it can...
As long as it stays dry, we're good. Would you like this one on consent agenda?
Yeah, that can be on consent. Item three, PW 2025-22, 2025 EEI hourly rates.
Denied.
All right. These are annual review of EEI's contractual hourly rates. Done under the base contract, supplemental contracts, and all developer work. There is an analysis appended to the memo. Last year, they had asked for a 3.8% change between 2023 and 2024, and this year it's 4.0% from 1 year to the next. We haven't had any issues with the base contract in a while, and so we do recommend approval. I'm happy to take questions.
I'm good too. I assume Chris doesn't have anything. So, consent? approving the rates, so they can pull it off if they, I'd say, go consent on that.
Okay. Well, that's pretty consistent with what I've seen with
Oxford. Yeah, same here. That's, item 4, PW2025-23, resolution in support of the Wineland Mayor's Challenge for Water Conservation. And Aaron did the memo on this one. We've participated in this every year. It's generally just a water conservation pledge that we publicize. There's no contests or gimmicks this year, and so the resolution just endorses our support of it. We'll do some social media on it and encourage people to sign up and pledge their water conservation efforts.
Sorry, I was on mute. I apologize for that. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. They did put it on pause last year, so this is the first year coming out of that pause. So hopefully they'll get a lot of they'll get a lot of participants. There's also a school portion this year, and I forwarded it along to Yorkville School District so they can take a look at it as well.
Good. I'm good too. This could go on consent, but John's probably going to want to read it, right? So
yep. I'll put it on the regular.
Yeah, okay, so we'll put that in regular. Okay, PW2025-24, resolution authorizing the purchase of four Ford F-150 trucks from Riverview Ford in the amount not to exceed $179,713.
Absolutely. Just like the memo said, we're looking to purchase four trucks. All of these trucks were, three of these trucks were slated for fiscal year 26, but we had some money that we were not going to spend until 26, so we're just kind of flip-flopping what we're going to spend it on. The last of the dump trucks is not going to be here till after May. So that's where a good bulk of this money comes from. The one additional truck that I'm asking for is for the, when we hired the assistant director, that truck now went to the foreman, so we're kind of short an extra truck. One for me, I stole a truck about 3 years ago. It's now needed in the fleet. Jesus, the facilities manager's truck, is a 2002, I believe. So we've got our use out of the trucks. It's just we're growing and we need new trucks. And these trucks are all on the ground. That's why we did it this way. They're all ready for purchase from all the dealerships. As far as I know, they haven't sold any last week as the time of publishing. So if you have any questions, I'll gladly take them.
Is anything else going to need to be done to them?
No, these are not plow trucks. These are strictly 150s. Lettering would be the only other thing.
No strobes or anything like that?
Strobes are in there. The strobes are in.
All white?
No, whatever colors they had. There's a gray, a silver, a white, and a black, I believe. And the reason it is a supermajority bid is these weren't sealed bids. We just went with quotes because these were what was on the ground.
Well, then also there's enough money in the budget for the, if we're going to do it this year, if there's
yes.
more money than we'd have to supermajority up for that.
Yeah, there is enough money to cover it. Rob gave the okay to this one as well.
This the chassis that we paid for, is this the one we've been waiting on for a while?
2 years.
Okay.
Almost three. The Western Star will be almost 3 years. A little bit shorter than the Peterbilt, which is over 3 years.
No increases on that this time.
Just right out of the gate, and then that was it.
Okay, so we don't have to let Dan know about it.
Yeah.
We're good. Dan will be okay.
Okay, Matt. Go ahead, Greg.
Is it completely necessary for everybody to have trucks?
These are, for Jesus, yeah. Facilities, and for the foreman, assistant director, and director, yeah, I don't think we could share trucks.
No, I was saying that.
The other crew is only getting two.
I meant something a little more fuel efficient, something that.
Oh.
I mean, if you're really not going to use the bed, is it?
We did the four doors. Okay. We did the four doors so we could take them to schools, we could take them to trainings, okay. That kind of thing. These are just the 150 four doors.
Okay.
Which were actually as cheap as the XL two door. Cabs.
I was thinking
yeah.
something smaller. You know, you're just driving
sedan.
Around.
Sedan. I looked at
not a sedan, but like yeah. a
I looked at the Explorer. I looked at the Explorer. You're pretty comparable in price. So you'd have to go to an Escape, which some other people could fit in. I don't fit very well into Escapes.
Yeah, no. That's what I was thinking was Explorer.
But. Yeah, the Explorers are almost comparable. I looked at them. They're 42 to 50, depending on what you get.
Gas mileage isn't much better either.
No, and the resale value on an F-150 is much better at the end than than an Explorer. Good question. Thank you, though. I looked at that.
All right, this will have to be a regular agenda. We're spending some money, so. And it will be a new supervisory, so. Okay, item 6, PW 2025-25, resolution approving an engineering agreement with Engineering Enterprises Incorporated, parentheses, the 2025 water main replacement construction engineer.
This is our typical engineering contract with EEI. This year, the main thrust of the water main replacement is going to be on the older part of town on the south side. South Main, Morgan, I believe, Madison Court way at the very end, and Hydraulic are the main ones. There's 21,000 in direct costs. I believe that's for testing. Yes. So that is the direct cost. The rest of it is $420, $291 on the contract, bringing the total to $441,516. If there's any questions, I'll gladly answer them.
Craig?
No, I assume this is all part of the DuPage Water replacement
stuff. Yeah, this is a replacement of the old cast iron mains with ductile.
Do we send out notifications to the people?
More than one.
Yes.
Okay.
And we do the blurb on social media, you know, projects are coming, and they're notified throughout different stages in the summer because these will get repaved as well.
Okay. Yes. Chris? Okay, that'll be on regular agenda. Item 7, PW 2025-26, 2025 Road to Better Roads, MFT resolution and cost estimate.
All right, this is standard paperwork for the MFT portion of the road program. So as we've done the last couple years, we've had two separate programs. We've had one funded with local funds. Actually, I'm going to talk about that in a second, later on the agenda. And then we have one funded using MFT money. The one we're talking about right here is using the MFT funds. So IDOT requires the passing of a resolution and then approval of an estimate. So it's just standard paperwork that we have to pass and submit as part of the approval process before we can go out to bid. So we're getting ready to do that and make our submittals to IDOT. Therefore, we're seeking the approvals. So I'd be happy to address any questions anybody may have.
So we're actually not spending the money here, just to go ahead, but paperwork.
Yes.
Okay, so then Matt, we'll put that on the consent. Item 8, PW 2025-27, resolution approving a bid to complete the 2025 local roads repaving project, that's parentheses, 2025 local road program contract.
All right, so this was the local project I was just talking about, the non-MFT project. So we took bids a few weeks ago. We had the typical bidders bid the project. Low bidder was Builders Paving, below our estimate. And we are recommending award of $3.3 million in change, and be happy to address any questions anybody may have.
Great. No questions. That'll be on regular agenda.
Before we go into the next item, I do have a question.
Go ahead.
With the water mains over there, we're doing sidewalks, correct?
South Main will be done and the hydro will be moved.
Okay.
Yeah. How'd I know?
I forgot we had that conversation.
Yes.
But yeah, okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Item 9, PW 2025-28. Resolution approving an engineering agreement with Engineering Enterprises Incorporated, 2025 Local Road Program Construction Engineering.
This will be the construction engineering agreement to go with the previous agenda item. Nothing out of the ordinary here. This is an hourly rate contract estimated in the amount of $249,820 for those services. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm good.
Chunk, we should probably put that on regular too. Item 10, PW 2025-29, resolution approving a bid to complete the Blue Stem Drive water main improvements. Blue Stem water main replacement contract award.
Yeah, we took bids a couple weeks ago for the water main replacements. This is just north of City Hall here. This project is actually related to the Lake Michigan work. There was a small diameter water main that we need to replace with a 16-inch diameter to get the better flow. We need to move water throughout the city. It was kind of a choke point, so we identified this several years ago. So this has been part of the overall Lake Michigan project for years now. So a number of bidders, like 8 or 9 bidders bid the project, so pretty good from that perspective. The low bidder was Windsor Excavating, which we've been working with on a few projects a year ago. They've won a project here recently, the larger replacement program. So we're certainly recommending award. And that amount is $465,000 and change, as noted in the memo. Be happy to address any questions that anybody may have.
What size is it now? We're going from 16 to, from what to 16?
Yeah, I believe it's a 12, but we're going to a 16. Yeah, so through our water modeling, that was a lot of head loss, very, very much a choke point in the system.
It's very close to the PRV station that feeds the lower pressure zone as well, so it's needed, especially as we grow.
Do you know when they'll be starting?
Yeah, we believe they'll start right around May 1st, and then probably about 6 to 8 weeks worth of work. And then that same area is targeted for paving, resurfacing, actually the MFT project that you just passed the resolution on. That project will resurface that entire area probably starting in July.
Thank you.
So is this all out of water? The budget,
yes.
So it's all coming out of the water?
Yes.
And then on the regular agenda. Item 11, PW 2025-30, resolution approving an engineering agreement with Engineering Enterprises Incorporated, the Blue Stem Water Main Improvements, the construction engineer.
Again, the same typical agreement with EEI for construction observation for the project that we're just talking about. This is an hourly contract estimated at $51,448 with an additional $4,000 almost in direct expenses for a total of $55,388. Staff is recommending approval and be happy to answer any questions.
Is it coming out of the same
water fund
as well?
Water.
Okay. Good.
Greg?
I'm good. Good, good. We'll put it on regular two. Item 12, PW 2025-31, resolution approving an engineering agreement with Engineering Enterprises Incorporated. This is for the Bertram Drive connection, and this is design engineering.
Yeah, this is one we've all been waiting for, which is the second connection for Bristol Bay out to Route 47. Right now, all they have is Rosenwinkel to Galena. So we've been waiting for this a long time, and we want to be ahead of IDOT. We do have, I believe, the preliminary elevations from IDOT, so we can match it. Mm-hmm. So once we get ours in design, we'll be ready to go and waiting for. The amount of this contract was contemplated in the 26 budget at $52,000, and I believe this is just slightly higher, but that's at $6,000, sorry, so $58,000. And that was because there was some right-of-way, I believe, Brad, that you needed to obtain that was a little more expensive.
Yeah, it wasn't anticipated that we needed right-of-way initially when we budgeted the project, but as it turns out, we do need right-of-way, so
correct.
There's several legal documents that we need to prepare, so that's what threw it over the budget a little bit.
Rob was not worried about that. He said that we would be okay.
And that's in the 26 budget?
That's correct.
So, since if we're going to be ahead of them, would there be anything that could happen, like when IDOT comes in then after we've done the work and something says, oh, you guys got to change this after we've done the work?
They're pretty far along on their design, so we're going to match right into their existing.
So there's nothing that they might come up upon that they didn't count for, and then all of a sudden.
I think the chances are very, very slim.
No, just gave the Bristol Bay subdivision heads up today.
Nice.
With the caveat that we're still at IDOT's mercy.
Correct.
But no date in sight, but it's on here. We're prepping for it, so that was welcome news to them.
Okay. Okay. And put that on regular. Item 13, PW 2025-32, resolutions approving an engineering agreement with Engineering Enterprises Incorporated, the 2026 Water Main Improvements Design Engineering.
This is another Lake Michigan project for next year. We're already starting the design process of removing and replacing the old cast iron mains with ductile iron, as we are required to do. This is a fixed fee proposal, I believe, in the amount of $308,803 to basically bring this project all the way from its infancy all the way through bidding and contracting. Next year, I think the main thrust is like Illini, I believe Walter, some dead ends over by Penny Lane Apartments, which are across from the Yorkville Intermediate School. There's an old 4-inch line, and then we're going to go after the old rear yard mains in Countryside that were not done as part of the other project. Those are our main areas of replacement.
And this would have to be done for the Lake Michigan, so.
And when we did the project the first time, we didn't have the funds to complete those rear yard ones. We wanted to get as much water main done as we could in the problem areas.
Item 14, PW 2025-33, pavement management study, review of results and scenarios, presentation.
All right, so Bart's pulling up the presentation. So some of you, I was able to introduce Chris Ott to, but this is Chris Ott, project manager with their firm. He does a lot of pavement management type of work. He's certainly done the work in the city for the last several go-arounds. Heads up all the road programs too, so all those road programs we just talked about, Chris and his team lead the charge on that, so he's very familiar with the city, and he is going to present some of the results.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So just I'm going to summarize kind of where we're at and the next steps. So just briefly going through, we're going to review some of the project goals we had, inventory and database the city's streets, go over some paving history review of what the city's been able to accomplish since the last study we did, summarize the inspection results, a little bit of a comparison between where we're at in 2018 and now, go over our budget scenarios that we put together, and then discuss next steps and answer any questions. So, goals. The goal is to develop a pavement management program for the city. So what is that? Assign a rating to each roadway, 0 through 100, so we can better communicate that to the residents. Inventory what the city has. How many miles do they have? How many of them are concrete? How many of them are asphalt? Total area, total miles that the city has. Develop our maintenance strategies and cost to determine how much it would take to maintain the city system. Review the budget needs and impacts of how funding or not funding the program would be, and then ultimately apply that budget to develop the five-year program. That's kind of the final deliverable, is that five-year paving plan for the future. So what is the pavement management program? It's a decision-making process to help municipalities make cost-effective decisions with maintenance, rehabilitation, you know, you're trying to maximize the amount of money that you have and spend them on the streets at the right time. It's not necessarily fixing all of the worst streets first. Sometimes it might be fixing some of the bad streets while also fixing some of the streets that are in fair and poor condition. Because as you see on the next slide, as you go down the pavement degradation curve, so the pavement does not deteriorate linearly, it'll deteriorate over time where it stays in pretty good condition at the beginning, kind of through that middle years will start to fall off, and then as you get really low, the score will kind of level off. So you want to try and hit that in that rehabilitation timeline where you're at your $15 to $40 a square yard. Historically in the city, we've been around the $27 to $30 a square yard with our overall historic cost. But as time goes on and you get into the more costly reconstruction, it can really start to add up. So the goal of this program is to get those roads before they kind of fall into that reconstruction category. So what else can it do? It can help us decide what streets we want to fix, where, when, and how much. So you can kind of say, all right, I want to know how much money I have to spend, and it'll tell you what streets to fix where. The other thing is you can do it the opposite way, where you can say, I want to maintain a rank of an 80 or an 85 or whatever rank that the city wants to achieve, and then it'll tell you how much money you need to spend to do that. So it's kind of powerful and be able to do things both ways to let you know how, if you spend X money, what it does to your rank, and then if you want to achieve a rank, how much money you need to spend. So how do we get the information? So we teamed with a sub-consultant called IMS, who's done the city's pavement management testing the last two times, back in 2013 and as well as in 2018. And what makes up the score? So primarily 90% of the score is from the surface condition. That's going to be what you guys see on the surface. Your cracking, longitudinal cracking, transverse cracking. Those are more of your temperature-related cracking, not necessarily related to loading or base-related issues. Then you get into your alligator rutting, depressional areas. That's going to be more indicative of some sort of base problem, some underlying problem other than just the pavement. And then there's also a roughness index where they will, when they drive the roads for testing, they're measuring how rough and smooth the road is. That factors into how the overall score is. So based on those distresses, it'll determine what your pavement condition index is, or PCI, and it's broken out into six different categories: excellent to very poor. And then there's obviously numeric values associated with all of those. Here's just some picture evidence of what each ranking is. So an excellent road is going to be a road that was recently paved, very little, if any, cracks in the road. Very good, you're going to start to see some of the longitudinal cracking. That's going to be that crack down the middle of the road. That's usually the first spot of failure due to how the roads get paved, one lane at a time. Then you're good, start to see a little bit more extensive cracking. Fair, obviously that gets worse all the way down to very poor, and poor where you're starting to see large cracking in the wheel path, maybe some alligator or base failure, stuff like that. Here's just a review of what we've been able to do from 2019 to 2025, broken out by kind of how it's been funded. So the city has been aggressively replacing water main. Well, as part of that too, they have also been resurfacing the streets a lot of times at the same time, since the water main's going down the street typically. There's the Road to Better Roads. That's the traditional city's MFT project that they've been doing for a long time. They've had a couple federal projects. So we did the Bristol Ridge Road, was an STP project we did, and this coming year, we'll be doing the East Van Emmon street resurfacing. The Road to Better Roads supplemental is gonna be some of the additional paving we've been doing. So in 2023, that was the baseline road project. 24 and 25 is gonna be that additional subdivision paving that's been done. And then with the Rebuild Illinois bond money, the city was able to get the Fox Hill subdivision repaved with that. So overall, the city has made a large investment and resurfaced a total of 46.4 miles. out of the city's approximately 115 miles that they have. So they've made a significant investment. Obviously, that Road to Better Roads supplemental over these last 2 years has been a huge chunk of that, and I know there's a couple more years of that. So that's just kind of, it gives you a snapshot of what the city has been able to accomplish since the last study. There's also a handout that I provided everyone that shows the paving history going back to 2014, just in a map form for you all for your reference. And here's just a summary of total expenditure, and this excludes, this is basically everything other than the water-related project. So average expenditure has been $2.67 million per year, with a total of 39 miles of resurfacing, or about 5.6 miles per year. That's resulted in 34.4% of the city streets being resurfaced. A resurfaced every street that was part of the original plan.
You can keep going.
We can hear it. The owl isn't showing. It's your screen share is still on, but it's not showing the room.
Oh.
Does that help?
Yeah, it turned off the camera for some reason.
Yep, you got it.
What about now?
Now we can see the room, but before we could hear. So we heard the presentation. Chris Ott, we heard him all along.
Okay, great.
And then kind of that last bullet point is that the city continues to spend a significant amount on preventative maintenance. So each year we are crack sealing subdivisions and crack sealing streets that were recently resurfaced. And maybe about 4 years ago, the city made the investment in doing the asphalt rejuvenation on the streets that had been resurfaced the previous year. So after the street was resurfaced, the following year it gets the asphalt rejuvenation. It's a cheap upfront cost. It's an upfront cost, but it's a lot cheaper than having to resurface it, and that will allow the road to stay in excellent and very good condition longer, thus stretching out the pavement life. So, as I stated, here's a map of the paving history that I handed out to everyone. So this is everything north of the river, just giving you an idea of what has been paved dating back to 2014 when we basically implemented the first Road to Better Roads project, and then this is the area south of the river. So just getting into the results, so the city had 114.4 miles of roadway that were tested. I think like 110 of those are asphalt, and there's about 4 miles with a concrete road centered around the, you know, the Menards area and City Hall here. The current overall rating for the city was an 81, which puts you in the very good category. And currently, over 80% of the city's roads are in good or better condition. So have made significant progress since our original study. And another handout that I gave you was just a handout of what the current ranking of all of the city's roads are, color-coded. And then this does assume that the 2025 streets are already completed. So just know if you drive down one of the streets that's going to get fixed this year and it is in poor condition, that's why it's shown in excellent on the map, just trying to get it as up to date as possible as it would be after our construction projects are completed. And then this is just the same thing south of the river. So comparison, where are we at in comparison to where we were in 2018? So you can see we've made a huge improvement on the amount of excellent and excellent streets that we have in the city. And overall, the excellent, very good, and good is an improvement from where we were in 2018. We've reduced the amount of fair streets that we had, and the poor is about the same. And I think that's a lot because of some of those subdivisions that we're trying to tackle here in the future. Coming years, coming due with their age. So some budget analysis that we ran. So what, if we want to maintain our current rank of an 81, what is our annual average expenditure? That would have to be approximately $3.2 million. And that would result in one other thing that we tried to do is just get an idea of if we touch this street this year, when would we come back based on our historic costs that we've been seeing for resurfacing. So that gets you on about a 19-year resurfacing cycle. What's currently proposed in the CIP, which is a significant investment in years one and two due to that additional subdivision paving and then kind of back into just doing the MFT program, that would take your rank from an 81 to a 79, which is still a very good score and well above what I see in other communities, what we see in other communities, and what I would say is industry standard. Gets you on a resurfacing cycle of 22 years, and then kind of proposed some, if you wanted to do 15 years, how much would you have to spend? If you wanted to do 20 years, how much would you need to spend? Which the 15 year would be a little over 4 million, the 20 years would be 3 million, and kind of that last item was to kind of show what the power of doing that investment in year one and two with the subdivision paving is. You can see if you weren't to make that investment, you would be going from a 79 to a 76, and then your resurfacing cycle would stretch out from 22 years to 37 years. So I think the ultimate goal would be to try and stick around that 20 year. Most pavements are designed to last 20 years. With our preventative maintenance we're doing, I think we're starting to see the benefits of that and then stretching that life out. But I think a good industry goal would be to try and stick around that 20-year resurfacing cycle, which the proposed CIP budget is. So with that said, some other factors just to keep in mind as we move forward would be, as we start to redo streets, there is a significant investment in concrete work that we did. Hopefully the idea is that the concrete hasn't deteriorated as fast as the road, so we won't have as much concrete work to do the next time to go around. ADA ramps, the rules have been pretty stable and have been have not changed. They were rapidly changing in the early 2000s. We've now made significant ADA upgrades on our roads. So in the future, we shouldn't have to touch those ADA ramps, which actually is a fairly significant investment each year that we do to update those ADA ramps. And then, as we redo the streets and we're getting to them in that fair to poor category, maybe instead of doing 3 inches of mill and overlay, we might be able to get away with 1.5 inches, 2 inches, more just surface, wearing surface improvements. So just a couple things moving forward on how we might be able to get a little more work done in the future. So kind of the next steps and what we're looking forward to is just try and identify the target budget, what we want to move forward with. Once that budget has been identified, we will work with staff to develop the 5-year plan that would then come back in front of the committee for review, and then ultimately council approval of the 5-year plan to then begin design engineering for the 2026 program. So with that, happy to answer any questions, comments, and thank you for your time.
Since I was around from the very beginning of this, I can tell you when we first started this, the roads that were really bad were the older parts of town, pretty much, and I think that's where we concentrated a lot. And a lot of their subdivisions at the time were fairly new.
Yep.
And now, if you think about it, that's what, 2006, 2007,
correct.
Those are approaching 20 years old.
Correct.
And so when you hear the 114 miles, you think, oh wow, how did we manage it? Well, a lot of those 114 miles probably didn't need our attention at the time. And now we're going to start seeing that. I mean, I think across the board, how old's Bristol Bay? Because Craig, you live there. It's 20?
Construction in 2006.
Yeah, so Rain Tree.
Windet.
Yeah, Grand Reserve.
Heartland Circle.
Grand Reserve started then.
Luckily, it was idle long enough, and we didn't accept it, so that pavement is not as old as the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would add to it, too, is I don't think we ever bonded out. Right?
We did some of Countryside.
Okay.
There were some, for some of the federal projects, I think maybe we wrapped in Game Farm. We would have bonded that out.
But a lot of this was so much per year we were spending.
For sure, yep. And we've done the first 2 years of the subdivision cluster program without having to bond. And the first time you guys reviewed that 2 years ago,
we were talking through increases in the road infrastructure fee. We were talking through, you know, $10 to $17 million in bond. And now we've successfully shoved that off another year. It's just next year you probably won't be able to do it unless you issue a $9 million bond, according to current analysis. So,
yeah, I know someone asked when I was first started about, well, what if you just did them all at a time?
Ooh.
It was like, somebody said like $40 million bond you'd have to just go and start going across and doing them all. So, I mean, clearly we didn't. We could afford to do it at that point in time either. So, but yeah, I just kind of wanted to add those to your presentation because it's kind of.
Yeah, so I think the important takeaway there is, you know, we've made a lot of investment. We've improved the road scores and the system, you know, over time. We don't have a five-year program, so we're going to need to go through and have our staff make some recommendations on how you guys review that. And the important thing is that our new annual target, you know, to hit things on a you know, normal replacement cycle, would be between $3 to $4 million in annual expenditures. So, you know, we currently have more than that planned in the next two fiscal years, subject to bonding, of course, as I mentioned. And then after that, we've only got, I think, $1.6 million currently identified. So it's not something we have to solve now, as much as we know that the target is there and that we'll need to address that in future budget years. And I suspect that as, you know, larger projects come up, adjacent to developments, data centers, et cetera, you know, some of that will be picked up with developer money, which should help things out significantly too. But for now, you know, we know the scores, we know where things are poor, and we'll need to come back with a, you know, a five-year program probably fall, or do we?
No, I think we're shooting May, if that's okay. Yeah. We'll bring it back in May, yes.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And that'll be based on the scores, the pavement, you know, lifespan curve.
Yes.
And where those investments should be made.
So, if you're back in May, are you going to, like, target, like, some of the streets that might be, like, Michigan? Will that be factored in there or not?
Hopefully those are done by water, correct, Brad? The Lake Michigan stuff?
Yeah, we take a look at all of that.
Correct.
So, you know, we know what our water main plan is based on, you know, working with, you know, Eric and his staff.
Right.
And we kind of map that against this and adjust accordingly.
Pick the years.
It's all factored together, you know, that we're not, you know, going to, like, replace water main on a project we just resurfaced. So,
exactly.
You know, that's all taken into account.
Yep.
One other thing I would note is that the, you know, city's been successful grouping the streets together. So there is a chance that some of the streets we're going to fix might not be as bad as other streets, but we've been successful kind of doing that neighborhood or that cluster work that reduces the cost for the city, reduces the mobilization for the contractor, reduces the impact for the residents having to come back. So we always obviously take into account geographical and trying to group streets in a way that makes sense. So it's not one block here, three blocks here, five blocks on the north side of town. So we do try and group streets together as best as we can.
So I was surprised we didn't do Leisure when we did Georgiana, Pleasure, and Hillcrest and Sunset. It just seemed kind of odd, one block out of five in that whole neighborhood.
And then the Hillcrest.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were actually very good score.
Yeah, they're not in bad shape.
Yeah, that's why we didn't.
Yeah.
If they would have been marginal, I guarantee you we would have.
That's a good point.
Yeah. They
I was
were
thinking the same thing. You just mentioned that.
Yeah. The 2024-25 roads, better roads supplemental, was that part of that subdivision cluster we talked about?
Yes.
We haven't come up with a catchy name yet. There's been about three or four different
probably
names.
Probably need to rename both of them at some point. You know, I think the Road to Better Roads name has probably run its course. So, yeah. Street paving, subdivision paving, I don't know.
Hey, New Roads.
So the resurfacing cycle that you kind of went through just presumes that we would stay with the same amount of mileage, right? It doesn't account for any future.
Correct.
Good point.
But hopefully there's offsetting income associated with the growth, but yes, okay. That's correct.
I think in order for us to make that five-year plan, though, we need some kind of direction. Do we want to stay at the 79, the 76, the 20-year cycle?
Well, let's pull this up here real quick.
It wasn't a lot of money difference, just the years.
Yeah, I think, Chris, if I was around the 20, if you want to keep around the 20 years, roughly $3 million a year. Yep, there you go.
About $3 million a year.
So what are we talking about here?
So we would be talking about what should we be looking at for an average spend to get to, you know, a five-year plan. Because a five-year plan is going to assume, yes, we're doing this and this and all of this, but that leaves us at a 79. So, and it's $2.7 million, so that's slightly under our target. So I think probably a midpoint, especially since we're talking about years 3, 4, and 5, is to just do $3.5 million across the board. So, you know, to bump this up, so that'll require, you know, some additional expenditures in year 3, 4, and 5, which will then require us to, you know, amend the budget proposal and all those other things. But, you know, I think shooting for, you know, $3.5 million of average spend, you know, gets you between an 80 and an 83 future rank, and a 15 to 20 replacement cycle is probably a good start. And then obviously we always can increase that or decrease that as bids come in and other things come along.
Or other revenue.
Yeah,
so you absolutely. It might allow you to, down the road, add more to it, right?
Yep.
This is kind of a, kind of just a guesstimate sort of, right, as far as what
yep.
Anything else, man?
Eric, Bristol Bay. Eric.
Yes, sir.
Are those roads maintained by the HOA, except for Rosenwinkel?
No. There's very few that are maintained by the HOA, mostly where the multifamily townhomes are located. Those are private.
Those are private, okay.
Where it's single-family homes are all public streets.
Right. I was trying to remember. It's been a while since I've been over there.
Most of the whole right-hand side.
Yeah, so all the condos and all the townhouses, pretty much that whole western.
Yeah, there's only one pocket of single-family in there.
In the front up there, yeah.
Yep.
Right off of Bertram there. Yeah.
You had that same thing over in Fox Highlands. The main road was done, I believe. You did it, just did it, right? And then the townhome was
there. Yeah.
Actually, those streets are really narrow, too.
Yes.
And so I know they're done by their HOA. We don't even plow snow in there.
Right.
Correct.
Same thing with Crystal Bay. There's no snow plowing.
Any questions?
Kylie, what's our direction on that?
I kind of think that's a good way to start.
Yeah. You said we already got that budget pretty much figured in, right?
Yeah, we're at $2.7 million over a five-year period. So, you know, increasing it to 3.5 isn't going to destroy anything, you know, I don't think. So it may change either the bonding amount next year or cause us to have to bond out in future years, but it's within spitting distance where we are currently.
Okay, so this will come back then to the committee, right, at some point in May?
Yeah, Brad suggested May bring back a five-year plan.
Are you giving a presentation at the council meeting as well or not?
Wasn't planning on it. It can definitely be in the packet.
I was going to say, maybe if you want to give the presentation, that's fine, but maybe attach it to a city council packet so other aldermen that aren't here could maybe give them a chance to ask questions.
Great.
So, however, yeah, I'll let you figure out how you want to do that.
Yep.
Okay, and item 15 is the DW 2025-34 water revenue study presentation. You said we're tabling that, right?
Correct.
Okay. Item 16, PW 2025-35 Southern Sanitary Sewer Connection Change Order Number 1.
All right, this project is for the extension of the sanitary sewer to the Cyrus One data center development. So the project has not initiated yet, has not started construction. We're still waiting on one easement, which has been agreed to. We just haven't had it executed. Once we have that, the project should start. So this is 100% funded by Cyrus One, as a reminder. So this particular change order involves the creek crossing. So the initial design of the project assumed that we would be able to open cut the creek crossing to install the sanitary sewer. We did this just not more than 2 or 3 years ago with the Bright Farms sewer extension, and were able to receive a permit. But after we bid the project, we got word from IDNR that now this section of Robbery Creek is on what's called an IDNR list of significantly biologically significant stream. So what that means is essentially you have to go to a very high level of permitting. You would have to do a fish study, and basically you know, several months of that, about 6-8 months of permitting, and very expensive to be able to accomplish that permit and do that work. So the alternative is to bore and jack, do trenchless technology underneath the stream, which you know is done, and certainly would probably save money at the end of the day and also save time. So we sought some dollars from the contractor and what that change would be. They came back with this number. So we are recommending that we move forward in this direction, because at the end of the day, we'll save money and it will be quicker to get the project constructed. So once the committee and the council considers it, we'll see, certainly be sending this off to Cyrus One to get their blessing, because we need them to sign off on it as well. But we wanted to take this first step here this evening. So be happy to address any questions anybody may have on this one.
Just a reminder, they're signing off on it because they're paying for it 100%. So there's no out-of-pocket for the city.
How come Rob Roy Creek became more biologically significant?
That's what we would like to know too, and we have not been able to get an answer on that one yet. We have sought that answer. Nobody can explain how this list was created. So Blackberry Creek has also made the list, and that was a recent change. So the YBSD water main that we recently had to construct, we had to go through the hoops there to actually get a permit, because boring and jacking was not an option because of the rock in the area. Wow. So it was a significant cost, significant delay, and we're trying to avoid that in this case.
Right. So to piggyback on that question then, so also this will come into play for IDOT and stuff going forward, right? They're going to have to address the same issues we are, right? Because Rob Roy, doesn't it cross 47?
With the bridge construction, that I yes.
Yeah.
But as a state agency, they may have an easier time getting an answer or a permit. I don't know.
Yeah, they're working around the creek, not necessarily crossing it and open cutting and disturbing the creek bed.
So that may be a big difference,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking there might be some other spots where other entities will have to deal with this.
Yeah, certainly as the city expands and runs other utilities, we'll have to deal with it, and we're just going to go with the bore and jack, you know, method.
So when you bore and jack, do you leave room for, like, the goal for a future? You know, is there space in there that if you decide, no?
Well, oftentimes, so typically in a boring jacking, you would have a casing pipe. So it's a steel casing pipe that's installed first.
Okay.
And then the carrier pipe, you know, in this case, the sanitary sewer, is loaded within the steel casing pipe. So, often the steel casing pipe is oversized a bit. So if you had to remove that pipe, the carrier pipe, and put in a little bit larger pipe, you probably could. It's not often that would be a consideration, just based on how things are sized.
Yeah, most of the sanitaries or sewers the size that they're maximum for the area they're serving.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking if you're going to that process, like other utilities even. Do you run them beside it?
We don't like to share, not in the same hole.
And there wouldn't really be any other.
Okay,
so I was just thinking water and sewer service, that's the main one.
And we have to keep them 10 feet apart.
Yeah, you want to keep your own city utilities separate for sure.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the figure is, but when they figure out the size, they can only use like 60% of the capacity. Is it 60%?
For wastewater, for the sanitary sewer, yes.
Yeah. So if the flow happens to go up in there, you've got room for it to go.
Yeah, we got some play.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I misunderstood. You thought about putting other utilities in.
Yeah, I was thinking if you're going down under it, right? If you're going down under it, do you create a, I don't know, what's the right word?
There's vaults.
A vault, yeah.
There's like utility ducts.
Yeah.
But that's probably more of a private utility where they would run like smaller cables, you know, like ComEd or AT&T or, you know,
MetroNet,
those types of things. But for city utilities, and as Eric described also, you know, there's a certain separation that you have to have between water and sewer. In case you had to pull it out and repair it, you wouldn't want to mess with anybody else. You know, you wouldn't want to have a private utility, in the same casing pipe.
So we have enough of that.
It's best to have it separate.
I'm just curious about that.
But that's a good question, though, for sure.
So, addressing what you're talking about, the Robroy Creek, what I've been reading about in the studies, too, is that fits the criteria of Blackberry Creek and Robroy because of the PFAS going on and the runoff from farmers. They're seeing significant phosphorus from the fertilizers they're putting down running off into the creeks.
Yeah.
So now they're paying more attention to the creeks and they're backing off the wastewater plants a little bit when it comes to the phosphorus.
As they should. That's where most of the contaminants come from.
That would be my guess is why they're making that a significant biological because of the amount of phosphorus they're seeing in those. In the creeks.
Oh, that's a good point.
That would be my guess. Mm-hmm. I do pay attention sometimes.
Chris? Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. So, what do you need from us on this one, Bart? We're not really spending it, but...
Yeah, you're approving a change order on the project, so you need city council approval.
Okay. So put it on regular agenda. I was just wondering if you want to make sure. Put it on regular. Okay. On to old business. Item 1, PW 2025-18, Northland Lane parking restrictions. This is a discussion, and I think this is part of that.
The intent of this was to study the different parking restrictions on each side of the roadway to see which one is better. I'm sharing this so Aaron and Chris can follow along. But the gist of it is that the existing parking restriction on the west side of the road should be moved to the east side of the road so that we have more parking. So west side parking would allow about 20 spaces, and the east side would only be about 7 or 8. So that's shown in a couple different exhibits here. So this is the exhibit that shows the existing parking restriction. If we were to keep that, the open areas would be where cars could park, 7 or 8. And then this is the proposed parking restriction, basically preventing people from parking on the east side of the road, allowing parking near the baseball field, which would allow about 20 spaces. So we gain a net of about 13.
Matt?
I mean, this is what we asked for last month, to get some kind of clarification on what exactly we're talking about from how many spaces would be left. Chris, I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at it. I mean, I'm kind of interested in your thoughts because your concerns last month, or maybe when you and I started talking about that before, was actual sight lines with foot on the side of the road east and west.
I haven't looked at the plan, but just hearing the numbers, obviously it makes a big difference from east to west side. Obviously, line of sight is a concern for me, but you know, parking is also going to be a greater concern to make sure that we have enough because we don't have enough as it is right now.
Right.
Yeah, Chris, so we basically are recommending around the curve in basically to the intersection of Western that not be parking. So we would recommend pulling that area out. So it's more with the basically what's parallel to the new Heartland West developments is where the recommendations are. So yeah, certainly if you get a chance, look at the exhibits and provide any feedback. But that's the suggestion from from our review.
So that's the area that is not highlighted?
Yes, yes, that's okay for parking, yes.
Okay. So we'll lose some parking from what we had. When you gave the numbers, did you give numbers of what is there today?
Yes, that is in the memo, in the okay. table at the end, yes.
30, right?
I think there's 30 there today, and basically be reduced to 20.
Okay. Yeah, we might have to look at something, might have to coordinate with Parks and Rec. We might have to limit use of it, because if we're going to cut that down to 20 or less, we will run into problems. I know Home Depot doesn't like people parking in the turnaround area behind that their space. So we'll work through the challenges. We'll figure it out, I guess.
Can you look to the back? I want to ask you guys something. So if I look at the north of the ball field, or even west of the ball field, that's open space, right, or not? Without me going out there and look.
Yes, there is. That's actually where the cursor is right now.
Yeah.
That's a sledding hill.
So it's got this pretty steep incline, so you really couldn't add any kind of parking for the facility when they're using a ball game.
Right. I mean, you could do nose-in parking at the street. That's probably your best place. But not a parking lot, not with the amount of dirt that's there.
Well, I guess that's what I was thinking. If you nosed in, they'd have to give up some parkland, and I didn't know what, without going out there and actually walking and look at it, I can't remember.
If the direction from council is to not lose parking spaces because of the development, we can try to identify some additional opportunities. So.
Yeah, as long as we're not compromising the park, I think that's what we want to, what I would want to see us try to do.
So the proposed parking restriction does change the area adjacent to existing homes. So, I'm assuming we probably want to send out mailers and then invite them to a teacher meeting type of a thing.
And that would be the five or so that's to the top?
Correct.
Up in there, right?
Yeah, because the students aren't banned to park in front of their, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so they're allowed to park in front of their houses and they'd be telling you'd have to move to the other side.
Yeah, then they wouldn't.
Because of the site distance.
Yeah, because that's on the third exhibit, it's the green area, which we're recommending no parking there, too.
Oh,
Because of the curb,
okay.
Because of the intersection. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
And that's where we're losing all the spots.
Yes.
Right. So you're losing spots there.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. Ooh, shift.
That's where you lose room.
Okay. Yep. I didn't realize that.
And then where are you making them up? Just by allowing the whole strip.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. Right.
Do we know how much action that field gets with? Because it's rented out, right? We don't run any parks and rec teams there.
I think the Red might be one of the organizations. And I don't know if they generate as head. Yeah. I don't know how much they use it. I mean, Tim would be the one that exactly, because they do in-house there, you're always going to have more parking probably for an in-house type game, because parents and grandparents
having been a volunteer coach now for the last dozen years, I've never had a practice there for a Parks and Rec team.
When we were younger, when my kid was younger, you practiced there. That's why I remember. It was more practice almost than it was actually a lot of games.
Yeah, because I'm almost wondering, like, if it's not a heavily used field, or if it is, but we have the opportunity to shift that team's practice to another field, does that help alleviate parking concerns?
That's a good point.
My presumption is when we have a majority of the parking concerns there, it's because of practices, it's because of games. Right. It's safety issues. We've had kids run out before. I don't think there's been any reports of any kids. We've had close calls, but nobody getting nailed there as far as I'm aware. But is there?
Yeah. No, that's probably we could find that out exactly. Like I said, practice half the people there, right?
when you have a game, you got both sides, so the your cars and you're going to need space for are going to be double.
And I think that's what Chris was talking about, and then they park behind Home Depot in the turnaround area.
And you're a coach. You know, a lot of times when, for practices, they're dropping Johnny off and leaving and coming back and getting him 2 hours.
They practice in, Bristol Station Park over my subdivision in Allendale, so we don't have the parking restriction on that side of the street, but Eric can tell you, we're having people park all willy-nilly.
All over.
Right, so they came in and simply did some striping for us, and that kind of helped issue, but same thing. And that's quite a bit of a walk to that field.
Right? Yeah, it is. We're over there too, so.
And there's no parking along Blackberry Shore Lane at all, correct?
Right.
Well, that's newer, right? Because at one time you could park over there, right? On Blackberry.
Both sides of the parking, or just the
that was done at the same time. I think it's Northland, if I remember correctly.
Okay,
I just remember us parking there. That's why
just the one side of the parking.
Yeah, just one side. On
north. Yeah, just the north side.
And I've talked to some of the Home Depot staff, just kind of exploring, that auxiliary garden area. Would that be, a potential? And the problem is, the heaviest season they run for the garden center where they store it all is April to October. So
yes.
Like,
yep.
Del Clear Star Gordon already.
I have a hard time telling people you can't park out in front of your house.
Yeah.
I mean, especially you're paying.
Talk about the north part there?
Yeah. If you're paying the kind of taxes we pay here, I'd be awfully peed off if you told me that. I'd tell you to go scratch and park there anyways. But, yeah, I'm not in favor of that.
Guys, well, they can currently park there. We have enough room to be able to shift traffic and allow them to continue to park on the east side.
So have no parking both on the east end and west side?
Switch sides at the
just switch sides
at the property line.
You'd probably lose a couple parking spaces in order to jog it.
You'd lose two to jog it easily.
Okay, well, we'll take a look at that too.
Yeah, that'll be something we can explore. Sure.
So before we send anything out, how about we bring this back in April, and then we'll review that. So, and then Tim can provide some info on the field usage, and we can talk through the different options for off-street parking.
What do you think, Chris?
Chris? Sound like you're going to chime in?
I apologize. I had to jump off for a minute for a call, so after I last spoke, I missed what was going on for the last few minutes. I apologize.
Back in April.
He's got to listen to the recording.
Yeah, check out the recording. What we're going to do is probably bring it back one more time here.
No problem. I'll go to the recording. I appreciate that, guys.
So Chris, just kind of the high level is we talked about, could you, restrict parking up by the houses right here to, I guess, remain as is, right?
Yeah.
Give yourself the opportunity to jog if you switch parking sides on the street. Basically where the field kind of starts or where the curb straightens out. And then in addition to that, we talked about whether or not Tim can see how much that's actually used. And is there an opportunity to maybe relocate that travel team or whoever, the non-rec team that is operating there. So kind of exploring creative solutions for alleviating parking concerns and maybe providing some additional, parking use for people that actually live within the proximity of the park as opposed to, external participants.
Yeah, Chris, I agree.
That sounds good.
Yeah, the other thing is I like asking Tim because he can tell you who's scheduled and like I said, if it's a travel team, it might not be near as much as if it's in-house, you got a lot of people from the community going to be, so you'll need more parking with it.
Yeah. No, one thing I'll say is I know that Tim has an idea of who's using, he knows who's using them, he knows if they're travel or in-house, but how much traffic really comes out of that, I'd be interested to know how aware he is of that, because obviously the local teams, anything small, they don't use it a whole lot, but it's a big influx, I've realized that, I've gone around to a few of the different fields, those travel teams do bring quite a draw.
Yep.
For some of those games. I'm surprised.
Okay. So I think that's the plan, and then we'll bring it back
That works.
Okay. Item number two under old business, PW 2025-19, resolution approving an engineering agreement with E Engineering Enterprise Incorporated, the Cannonball Trail Shared Use Path Feasibility Study, and the Preliminary Engineering. All right, so we talked about this last month, that we were going to come up with a feasibility study or a preliminary engineering analysis of what it would take to construct a trail along Cannonball. And so we have talked through that. Brad submitted the feasibility study, which I believe is within staff authority.
Yes.
I apologize for not having this, dealing with some tech issues over here. But before we authorized it, we wanted to kind of make sure that everybody wanted us to spend the money and the time to look at it. I think on the upside, without having talked to the county or the township, we have a history there of sharing, improvement costs. So there may be an opportunity there, since some of it is within the township, to do the work and then sharing the cost with those two entities. So I think if we have a better idea of how much it'll cost to do that, that conversation becomes easier, especially if it's less than the kind of $1 million grant number that we threw out. So we think that it's worthwhile to do, but wanted to make sure that you guys were good with that before we embarked on it.
I personally think it might be a useful thing to have, but we need to know numbers before we.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Rusty. I mean, for $20,000, sure, do the study and see what.
It'll tell you exactly our amount that we'd be dealing with, instead of just guessing it kind of at it.
I don't think the agreement made it in the packet. I apologize for that. The memo describes the agreement. There's a resolution approving your agreement, and there's no agreement. So, but it was sub $20,000.
Yes, go with that.
So it sounds like you got permission to
cool.
And then part of that would be contacting the township and county. Would it be part of that? Yeah, I don't know if they would be part of it per se, or if we need any information from them, but certainly, we would want to get the figures together before we approach them. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'd say once we have like a route established and we figure out the right of way and get some of our work done, then contacting them
at that point. Okay. I didn't know if that's part of the beginning of this whole thing too, or
probably not to begin with. No.
All right.
Was this in response to the gentleman who contacted us about his wife had the accident over there?
Yes.
Kind of, yeah.
But then we also started talking at that point, and there's, I think Matt was saying that there's already some pieces already in place that you could put it on, right? Some trail, and we have easement on some
there of could, that. There could be. I can tell you with Spring Meadows, at least the present board would have no issues with it and has asked about it. And I think Bart and I have exchanged kind of some loose inquiry about it within the last 3 or 4 years, just kind of generally saying, but nothing
right
formal
I think some people thought maybe you couldn't do anything to that, because even when we talk about widen the road there, right, the curve, you can do it. It's just a matter of how complex and what it costs.
So in a unrelated but similar question, as they widen Route 47, do we have any idea if they're going to be doing anything from that run Cannonball as we head towards 34 from a walking path, riding path?
Yes. On the east side, all the way to past Water Park, all the way to baseline.
On the east side.
On the east side.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's going to connect to Kennedy.
Yeah.
And that goes with how far from Water Park to.
All the way to Kennedy. It's going to connect right now.
All the way to Kennedy.
Yes.
And then it picks up.
And it'll go all the way to the end of the project.
So then the bridge, how will that work? Will it be like
a bike lane?
A bike lane on the bridge?
Yep. We call it a bike lane. It's a multi-use. It'll be wide enough for walkers and bikes.
Do we have the design? Is it separated by a guardrail or is it on road?
I do not believe it's on road. I believe it's set up more like El Domain, where there is a separation, but we don't have final design yet.
Okay.
Similar to what's on 71,
the trail?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know if the separation part was talking about at the Black Great Creek Bridge.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Because you got to cross that bridge and.
Got it.
With the train trestle underneath.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
I believe at those speeds, I believe there's separation, but I'll definitely check.
That might be part of the misunderstood question. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, I guess we're saying go ahead forward with it then.
Great.
Does that need to be on the consent or?
It didn't go on the regular or the consent agenda, and I would actually ask for a city council vote on this, even though we can authorize
it. All right, put it on
regular. Yeah. Buy-in from everybody. I'll give the others their opinions too.
All right, I think that's it. Unless there's any additional business.
I ask a question. The
water
revenue study that was deferred, when would that be available?
Hopefully next month. So
at this same meeting?
Same meeting, hopefully. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome to call me or Eric. I can give you my card afterwards. That way you don't sit through another meeting if that's all you're looking for.
Well, I know you've already, we've shared conversation, and you're one that shows up, and I kind of like that. I'm surprised more people know.
I was kind of shocked, to be honest with you.
Okay, then I would say meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.